If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome you.
Hi.
And welcome you all to another CU podcast, the pre-Valentine's Day edition for Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. Mm-hmm. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. I got to put that logo back on there. I keep forgetting. Are we talking about Activision, maybe slash Blizzard laying off some people? Some abysmal 3DS sales going on. A tax proposed on violent video games. Get into politics a little bit there. I know we're not supposed to. My ultra-conservatism is going to come out there.
Our Catholic upbringing.
And your Q&A. Ian.
Yeah.
It's a joyous day on the CU Podcast. First off, we're going to be at SoCal Retro Gaming Expo.
We sure are.
February 23rd and 24th. Is that a week and a half? It's a week and a half away.
It's not this weekend.
Holy shit. It's
a week from this weekend. Yeah.
SoCalRetroGamingExpo.com. Use code CU Podcast. Save 10% off your tickets. There's going to be a ton of arcade machines. I mean, like, a ton this year. Really up their game, Bobby and Chris and the team for the arcade machines, free consoles. Tournaments are going to be there. The Neo Geo World Tour will be there. They're coming on as a semi-sponsor or sponsor, I believe. And we're going to have people like James Rolfe is going to be there.
James Rolfe.
You're going to have me and Ian. We're going to have the Game Chasers.
Pat Contry.
Wood from Beat 'Em Ups. 8-Bit Eric. You're going to have Boogie2988. You're going to have Alex C&D. You're going to have Aaron Plays Games there. You're going to have, off the top of my head, I'm trying to get through them all. I named some.
Jesus, you look wild.
I look wild right now? There's a lot going on. I'm struggling, Ian. Maybe I should have went to the website and looked it up. That would have been better.
Maybe.
And more will be appearing. Oh, Norm the Gaming Historian, my roommate, and also Metal Jesus Rocks, Drunken Master Paul, and John Riggs.
Yay.
And Andre Meadows.
Woo!
So there you go. That's what's going on there. It's going to be a fun time. Very, very fun time to be had by all. The reason I'm wild-eyed, Ian, is I just launched a Kickstarter.
Indeed you did.
Before, and that's at ultimatesnes.com. Or search on Kickstarter. For a certain Super Nintendo guidebook that I've been working on with the team for almost 2 years now. It's been a good year and a half at least. It was 2017, the middle, when we started working on it. So, yeah, almost a full 2 years. It's been going. So check it out if you like Super Nintendo games. Ian doesn't like the console, but you know he likes some of the games.
Some of the games.
But check it out, and you know, if you like it, check out the cool video. And they got three different covers. And, you know, no pressure. It's available now. That's all. Just put my heart and soul and a lot of money into it. That's all. No pressure. None. That's why I feel weird. Speaking of weirdness, Ian, we got Valentine's Day coming up in a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, not one of my better holidays. I never told you the Broadway story. I took my date to Broadway back like 10, 11, 12
nope.
years ago.
Okay,
let's do it. Why not? This will help get the Kickstarter pit out of my stomach talking about this. So I dated this girl for like 3-4 months when I was about 26 okay. or so. 25, 26. Kind of coming out of that metrosexual phase, kind of easing out of it.
Okay.
Eyebrows growing back slowly but surely at that point. I was still living at home. This is before the garden apartments. I moved out of my parents' place at 26. My internal goal was 25. It's hard to get a job back then. Anyway, I met this girl off a website, and she was nice, and she was a little crazy. I didn't know the extent until we went to see Mamma Mia on Broadway. So traditionally, Ian, romance and me we kind of butted heads, especially around Valentine's Day. Okay. I just traditionally never really was with someone around Valentine's Day or was successful with the ladies around Valentine's Day. Just like winter was like the cool off period for me in general. So we were dating. We started, I think, dating like that November. So this is my chance to show Pat's a romantic. So I went all out. I went all out. I bought like the little Valentine's Day teddy bear. I bought all the roses or the bouquet. I don't know if they went rose. I might have went more non-generic than roses. As you swig the black tea, which is good.
Good tea.
Tahave. And then, you know, she likes Broadway. She said, I want to go see Mamma Mia. All right. Bought tickets to see Mamma fucking Mia.
All right.
Not exactly Pat's forte, musicals in general, but Mamma Mia.
All right. Well,
but who doesn't love Dancing Queen? Who doesn't?
You did it. You brought him. Yeah.
So we head out. You know, we get on the subway. Mm-hmm. Good thing about living in New Jersey, you go right into New York City. It's pretty straightforward. Go right into the New York City. We went to like a deli there. The waiter hit on me. It's a whole other conversation. But it was fun. We go to see Mamma Mia. And then this is like when you're with someone for 3 months, you're not exactly – that's when you kind of start to know this person more. Like this is like – that's to me like the line of delineation between 3 months. It's like, okay, now we're going to get a little more serious. We're going to see where we're at. You may not know entirely everything about the person. We go to see Mamma Mia, and she's all into it. She's like the other women. She's up. She's dancing around. I'm like, okay, this is fun.
All right.
Who doesn't like ABBA, right?
Right.
That weird, you know, what are they, Finnish, Swedish disco supergroup that, you know.
One of those two? I can't remember.
I think they're Swedish. Anyway, as Ian looks it up. So we go, and this is like picture perfect at this point. And she's up, and then towards the end, I see her.
Swedish,
okay. We're 50% off. The show has to do with like with family and your relationship with your mother and literally discovering who your father is. It's a weird plot. Like one of the three people my mom had sex with and had me. Like that's the plot of Mamma Mia. So I knew that she had some sort of a strange relationship with her father. She only lived with her mom. But we get outside and she this is going to go in a dark direction. But we're on the streets of New York and she has a mental break on the streets of New York.
I think he actually did tell me about this once.
Like this isn't to like poke fun of her psychotic episode. This is just to show why I hate Valentine's Day, because everything was perfect up to that point. Pat had this whole day planned, spent all this money I didn't have to spend to make it. This is my one shot at romance on Valentine's Day. And she has a breakdown, an emotional breakdown on the streets of New York. The bus shows up. The ambulance shows up. I got to talk to the cops. I don't know what the fuck's going on because I had no idea this was a possibility. And she then revealed stuff after the fact about, you know, medication she was on and things of that nature. And that was just like, so whenever I think of Valentine's Day, I'm reminded of that because that was like the most I ever went all in for Valentine's Day. And that was my, I guess, cosmic reward. This isn't a woe is me. This is just the reality of why I hate Valentine's Day.
I was going to say, I feel bad for her.
No, I felt terrible. But I was also like, what's going on?
Sure.
Like, what is happening right now? I have 20 people around me wondering, like, do you know what's going on with her? And I'm like, no, I don't have any idea what's going on. Dressed in my nice, you know, New York. I wasn't dressed in a suit, but I was dressed nicely that day. Oh, yeah, then I almost died another Valentine's Day. That's a whole other story. That was like 3 years ago. I almost was maimed on Valentine's Day. We'll leave that for next time, though. That was a good one. So the whole point is this. Love is horrible. No, love is grand. It's just, I have a very like punch-drunk relationship with Valentine's Day, I'll just say. It's the best way to put it. Punch-drunk? Yeah.
Valentine's Day is the birthday of our cat.
So that's the demonic spike.
That's how I celebrate.
And you always get your buffalo.
Yes, I. As a matter of fact, right before this podcast,
I think I reminded
started,
you by mentioning Valentine's Day.
I was gonna get one, but I was like, oh shit, I actually got paid. So yes, I ordered my Bocce's pizza. Now that'll be Spike's birthday dinner.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not for him. I'll make him poop.
Well yeah, you can't
throw up.
Cats shouldn't have cheese pizza. And milk and things. No. That's disgusting. Even though our cat Mocha used to eat spaghetti, we gave him like a couple of little pieces of spaghetti. He'd eat it like the gravy.
Oh yeah,
he's an Italian cat. Hey, the gravy, Sunday gravy. The NES marathon. I know we keep shifting it, And there's good reason for that. People's schedules are hard to line up with things going on. But we are zeroing in on March 9th and 10th. We'll have a more solid confirmation coming by the weekend coming up. But I would firmly pencil that in indelible ink, but not indelible in case you want to erase it. So it's delible, right? You want to do that.
Yes, delible ink.
Delible ink. Sure. So, yeah. And we're going to try to stream maybe right after the podcast real quick to make sure it's okay. I'm using OBS for the first time. I feel like I'm 5 years behind. We were streaming before anyone else.
Yes.
At least once a year. And now we don't know what the fuck we're doing. Like, we don't, like, that, I think it's great.
Yeah.
We were ahead of our time, and now we're behind. And I got to put on the logo on there as we roll into our first topic. As a random snorkeler.
Just put the logo on. I'll talk about I read a lot lately. Last night I got into a groove, and I was reading about how peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are so popular in the NBA.
Really?
Did you know that?
No.
Apparently there's a whole culture of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the NBA. They, in the past 10 years...
Like making their own or finding them somewhere?
So starting in like 2007 or 2008.
Okay.
This is where it starts. Someone on the Celtics was hungry, and they don't remember who, but they said, man, I could go for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And Kevin Garnett said, let's get on that. And apparently, the Celtics had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before every game that year. That was...
Is that when they won the title 2008, I think it was?
Yeah, exactly. Like 2007, 2008. So now, apparently, 10 years later,
it's 11
years later, it is now spread to all locker rooms.
It's spread like a fine jelly.
Yes. It has spread to all locker rooms, and it's a ritual.
Was this like a long read article you
It's
found?
A very long read article.
Okay.
Very, very long read article. It talks about how different teams do different things for peanut butter and jelly. They talk to nutritionists, and they're like, you know, it's not the greatest snack, but
it's not. I mean, it's protein based, but there's a lot of sugar in the jelly and a lot of carbs.
But they're like, hey, they're athletes. They watch what they eat. And
yeah.
The thing is it's comforting.
Yes.
It puts them in a happy space before they go and play.
Who doesn't like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
No, everyone does.
It's
so
food.
I can't remember which team it was, but one of them does like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich buffet where they have
Types of peanut butters.
They do
smooth, chunky,
they
organic.
Do, so they did grape. It was grape, a grape and strawberry, and then for butters you had your choice of smooth, crunchy, and Nutella. I think.
Well, how about fluff? Remember fluff?
Yeah, yeah.
I think
they'd avoid the fluff.
That would kill them if they ate the fluff.
Yeah, it's a.
I'm all about preserves, by the way. Good old preserves.
It's a fantastic thing to read about if you're curious.
Ian, you know I'm on intermittent fasting. You know I'm starving now.
Yeah, I want to. Well,
flexpromeals.com. Use code CU podcast.
Between last night and this morning, I've wanted nothing but peanut butter.
And now I think about it, I haven't had a peanut butter jelly sandwich in years because I don't buy bread anymore.
I only have them every once in a while, but every time I do, I'm like, this is good. This is tasty.
It's not the worst thing to eat, but it's not good.
So on the Golden State Warriors, there was a. One of the health and nutrition folks banned peanut butter and jelly. They took peanut butter and jelly away along with all the other like sugar and bad stuff, which is fine. But the team was like, no, that's fine. But can we get the peanut butter and jelly back? And they were like, no. No, you can't.
They're grown men. What do you mean they can't ban a food item?
So Steph Curry, on like the planes and stuff. So,
on the planes.
So Steph Curry stepped in, and actually I think it was like the new owner or the new coach of the Warriors.
Kerr?
Yeah.
He's been there for four years now.
Yeah, exactly. Kerr got the peanut butter and jelly back in. It was only like gone for like 6 months.
Were they afraid they're going to get guts on the basketball court?
It was known as the... It actually has a term that you could search, and it's the Great Peanut Butter and Jelly Wars of 2015.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And they won the title the first time in 2015.
So it's...
Curry's first MVP season.
It's a real thing. And I can't remember one last one. One team, they... do theirs up like on toast and whatnot when they're at home. They make them real fancy, organic nut butters and stuff like that.
I love organic peanut butters, by the way.
And for the...
all natural, I mean.
And for the opposing team, they get Smucker's Uncrustables.
So the Smucker's Uncrustables are the specific peanut butter and jelly breads you can get, right?
You put them in the freezer.
Okay.
You put them in the fridge.
They're like pitas, kind of, right?
Yeah, and you pull them out in your thumb, and they're not healthy. So,
oh, no, pitas are terrible for you.
But they're even less healthy than normal peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, so I can't remember which team it is. That's what
the pre-made ones.
Yeah, the pre-made ones.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what they allow. They have nice peanut butter and jelly at their home games, the
opposing get the shit.
The opposing team is left with Uncrustables.
With the chemicals and preservatives and all that, so they just start to atrophy on the court.
Kevin Garnett likes strawberry.
I like them all. I like the orange marmalade. I like preserves. I like raspberry even every once in a while. Strawberry. It's not a preserve I don't like or jam.
Porzingis had never had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich until he came to the NBA.
It was from Latvia.
I know.
They don't have stuff there.
So
he's amazed by it.
So he's a big peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Knicks don't have many more. I saw the best. This would be an NBA podcast.
Fuck the Knicks.
Who did you root for in Buffalo? Toronto?
I root for Toronto and Detroit.
Anyway, so
Detroit's my team.
So the funniest thing was Knicks jersey, in the back said cap space. It was just the funniest thing because if you follow sports, the Knicks basically got rid of Porzingis, who was the unicorn they called him, and they traded away for cap space because this year they're going to sign one or two huge free agents to transform the team. So they basically that's what they did. That was the Knicks strategy. So right now the team sucks, but they're going to have a good draft pick and they're going to sign. Supposedly Kevin Durant is going to come there. So the team will be watchable again for the first time in like 15 years.
Yeah.
There you go. Since the Patrick Ewing days. Patrick Ewing and Marv Albert doing the game. So anything else going on? I'll do a Kickstarter update before we start because now I'll be thinking about this the whole time. You happy for the Kickstarter starting, Ian? Are you happy when I accomplish something?
Yes.
He says that like $3,300 so far of the $15,000 goal. Well, there you go. We're off to a start.
Yep, you're fine.
We're off to a start. Okay. Ian.
Pat. Activision, Blizzard, employees.
Layoffs.
Unfortunately, we're looking at layoffs. And that's supposed to be going down today.
Could be any day now. Could be while we record this podcast.
Yeah.
Which records weekly, by the way.
Yes, we record weekly now. So, right, Activision, Blizzard, they're preparing for layoffs. It says that it may go down as soon as today on Tuesday.
Layoffs?
There's no official news. Playoffs? There's no official news yet. They think that a lot of the jobs lost will be in non-game development focused areas.
Marketing.
Marketing and PR. Esports was one that they said. This is obviously a huge bummer and comes kind of at the tail end of what was not a particularly great year for Activision and Blizzard in general, in terms of certain things, both what's the word I'm looking for? In terms of like their optics, how they look to the public.
Sure.
And internally.
They killed Heroes of the Storm.
Blizzard killed Heroes of the Storm, and then there's... something about a Diablo game.
I don't know what they're talking
about. And then Activision, Blizzard, they lost Bungie.
That's right.
They lost Bungie.
How about that?
Bungie left. They were able to negotiate themselves away from Activision and keep the Destiny name.
So another revenue stream just gone.
Right.
Yearly revenue stream was just eliminated. And they haven't had Blizzard hasn't had a new game in a few years now.
Yeah, the last one was Overwatch. I always forget how Blizzard is generally known for quality, which allows Blizzard to go quite some time in between releasing games.
But Activision has stuff.
But Activision
to help them to float them. So what does Activision have in the works right now? Let's see.
Coming out. Activision has all of its Call of Duty stuff.
Sure, that's what they're.
I mean, is
year
round.
That's a big money maker. Well, let's see what else they have coming up. Besides that, so basically, what it comes down to is that game publishing isn't a predictable sort of revenue stream. I think, and that's why you have these companies going more and more to DLC and to microtransactions, because at least with that, it's constant influx that's steady, right?
Right.
So, if they haven't had a huge hit in a while, they're going to have to. I mean, these are publicly traded companies, and that's where this conversation might lead into. Publicly trading companies, you have a lot more pressure to show revenue and revenue growth than if you're not. So if there's something, if you have an off-kilter year, people usually get laid off. That's how it works, unfortunately, with a lot of these companies. And the non sort of development divisions make sense, because if you don't have a game to publicize that's new, the marketing people are going to go first and the PR people are going to go first. It makes sense. It's just unfortunate that's how these businesses probably work. And then you hire people back if you're going to ramp up for a new game release. But if they don't have a new game in development, what the fuck's going on? So in this article by Jason Schreier, he's talking about there might be a concern over Activision having an influence on the company to make more financially driven decisions. I have no idea. That's what goes on at board meetings. I have no clue.
Basically, looking to make them, I don't know, what's the word, more commercial, I suppose.
More commercial? I don't know what that would mean for a company that...
Oh, like Blizzard, to put more out, I guess.
To pump out more regularly.
Pump out more, sure. instead of taking your time, treat it more like a mill.
I'm surprised it says that if the esports departments are going to potentially get downsized a bit. Maybe that's not, I guess that's not panning out the way they figured it would.
Well,
that's only you can guess.
I mean,
at least the investment isn't. That's why Heroes of the Storm, they invested some money into the tournament, and I guess they didn't see a payoff.
Yeah,
coming.
I mean, we talked about that on the podcast years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, I'd say 3-4 years ago, they talked about how they were, focusing on, I believe it was an esports division.
Sure.
And, really nothing has come of that. It's weird, I don't know, to see esports, like, ramp up and hit, like, it plateaued.
It plateaued pretty freaking quickly.
It plateaued.
We were talking about it 2 years ago. Oh, my God, it's on ESPN now. And it hasn't, I haven't seen it bump up at all.
Well, you go from 2-3 years ago it was on ESPN to that specific game that was on ESPN is now no longer supported.
So it hasn't caught on with the casual dirty people, I guess. You know, the way they thought it would.
The casual dirty people?
The dirty
casuals.
Yeah, whatever. I'm trying to be cool and hip.
So
it looks like, according to this article, the last Destiny DLC didn't do great. As much, it didn't hit their expectations.
Well, it did well, but I guess Activision's expectations were just through the roof.
Okay,
so this is a bummer, and I don't know. Activision seemed once so definitely criticized, but unassailable in terms of their market position, and this is how things change with just a few decisions.
Okay, and then Jason Schreier, who's covering this. Decide this to lead to another conversation, but he posted a picture of the compensation paid to the executive officers for 2017 from the SEC filing. So any publicly traded company has to disclose what the board makes,
right?
To the stockholders. The stockholders are they answer to the stockholders. So he posted the image of the salaries and the award options, the stock options. And all I'm going to say is this: to me, if you're trying to make a larger point that, well, these people are making a lot of money, that's how it works. To recruit these people, I mean, that's just how it works in business. If they're not, so you can say that. Well, people's jobs can be saved by this. Unfortunately, that's just not how this usually works. Some companies, they will say, "Yeah, we're going to pick it." The executives will take a pay cut this year because the company's not doing well. That's not the norm. It can happen, and I don't know how that works in terms of company to company. If that's in bylaws or if that's individual choice, when that happens, it would be nice if people did that, but. If you're going to be honest, that wouldn't save a huge amount of jobs versus how many are going to be cut. When these cuts happen, their entire, divisions get wiped out sometimes. So anything else to add?
No. No, I'm just looking at Bobby Kotick here, who made $28.6
million. On the top?
I feel like...
Oh, with the options. The stock awards, non-equity incentive plan compensation. Yeah. It's usually the stock you sign up for here. Yeah, stock awards. You get the salaries usually aren't what get people here. They want you to stay with the company, so they give you the stock options,
right?
And usually they're divested usually over years and years. You don't get them all up front. You got to stay with the company like an employee. But who knows? Yeah, there's a lot of money. The salaries, look at the salaries, like, yeah, it's not, the salaries are reasonable, but stock options, yeah, the stock options are usually through the roof because they're also cheaper to give people stock options versus straight cash. Anyway, okay. So we haven't brought up the 3DS that much the past couple of years because Well, my original prediction about the 3DS is it would be done by 2018. That it would just be gone because of the Switch, and the Switch sort of acting like a portable. Plus, the 3DS has been out forever at this point. It's been out for like...
2010?
I think it was 10. We looked it up, but we're talking about 8 years for Nintendo handheld. That's a typical, but that's a good run for a handheld. And we haven't had any announcement on the horizon for any sort of...
February 26, 2011.
So, okay. So, 8 years. All right?
Yeah.
Now in second grade, third grade. That's a pretty good cycle for a handheld. And we haven't heard anything about a new handheld being developed. The only thing we've heard about is maybe there's a mini Switch that's going to come out later in the year. And so, when you put these things together, it would make sense that, you know, that... The 3DS would slowly die out, even though the past couple years the sales didn't dip, horrifically. The 3DS sales were still pretty decent before the Switch came out. It was kind of keeping Nintendo floating between the disastrous Wii U and the Wii, and the Switch. Yeah, between the Wii and the Switch, the Wii U disaster period that Nintendo has already forgotten existed. Those, you know, 3 years, 3.5 year period. Nah, that didn't happen. 2012 to 2016. That don't forget it. Forget it. That didn't happen. So. One of the last big releases on the 3DS was Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story. Okay?
Different one. Mario & Luigi's Bowser's Inside Story and Bowser Jr.'s Journey. It's
the combo, yeah.
It's important to differentiate because Inside Story was a DS game that did well.
Yeah, this was a repackaging.
Yeah, this is a repackaging with bonus content.
Okay. So, according to the sales of this game... In Japan, it did just over 20,000 sales.
Yeah.
For a Mario first-party release game.
Right.
That is abysmal.
Yeah, that's wild.
Like, that, you can't imagine that happening. And this isn't like this isn't a game like Nintendo ignored. Like, this was in the Nintendo Directs. You know, this wasn't something that, like, oh, we're just putting out this game, you didn't hear about it. So when you hear that, if that's not the death knell for the 3DS, that's definitely an indication that there's no reason to support this console much longer.
So it's absolutely time to start looking to move on. But I think a lot of it has to do with perhaps just interest in the game wasn't high. Mario is Mario, sure, but it's a re-release of a game that was good, but not like... particularly fond over.
Oh, sure, I get that.
And I mean, it's an RPG Mario title, so it's fairly niche. I mean, I look here at I just looked it up because I wanted to see one of the last 3DS games coming out here is Etrian Odyssey Nexus, which came out last week. So I want, and that's a popular series in Japan. So I wanted to see what it sold,
how it did
when it came out. And that only came out August 8th, 2018, the Japanese version. It was called Etrian Odyssey X. It launched at 71,946 copies.
So that's respectable.
Yeah. So, yes, obviously, the 3DS is, you know, it's been on its way out. I actually kind of admire how long Nintendo's kept it around. But I think a lot of this has to do with the game itself as well.
Well, let's look at some of the other from the chart there. There's also, you have a few other 3DS games. Mario versus Donkey Kong Tipping Stars, 34,000 to date.
Those are all old games, though.
So people are still picking up here and there, it looks like.
Yeah.
Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move, 8,800 to date. Mario Tennis Open, happy price selection, 3,700. What's the happy price selection? That's just a discount, I guess?
Yeah, it's just like a greatest hits.
So at this point, you know, I thought the writing's been the wall for a while, but when you look at, if you go to the game data library and you look at the sales, you can search on 3DS, and you look at you can look at release date.
Oh, these aren't ones that are being picked up. These are overall sales, just in terms of like lowest selling Mario games.
Oh, that's what they picked for that article.
That's what this image is. That's not a. Yeah, so like Paper Mario Color Splash sold a total of 65,316. And then, yeah, so like the 3DS, Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, and Bowser Jr.'s Journey, that's a horrible name, has sold less copies to date than Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix on the GameCube.
Wow.
That sold almost 60,000.
So just to put it in perspective, it looks like the heavy hitters in the 3DS, like Pokemon, Pokemon Ultra Moon did like 2.5 million, and that came out in 2017. And then something like a Phoenix Wright does. Where's Phoenix Wright? I just saw it. Phoenix Wright, the one that came out in 2017. Is that the last one? It must have been.
What was it called?
All versions. Nara, Great Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney 2 did 130,000. So that's pretty much your I guess your ballpark of games for Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentina did 215,000, and that came out in 2017.
And that's a part of that's part of a game, if I recall correctly. I'm pretty sure that one also has multiple parts, like a Pokemon game. Like you can buy one or the other.
Okay,
I know that there was one Fire Emblem game that was like that. I'm not sure if that's it.
Monster Hunter XX did 1.8 million.
You could have told me 1.8 billion, and I wouldn't have been surprised. Anyways, so long story short,
making a movie, by the way.
Yeah, I know, it does not look good. Long story short, obviously the sales for 3DS games have been dropping heavily.
Yeah,
but I think like I said already, a good chunk of the reason why this one isn't moving is simply because it's a very weird release. I don't know that anyone was clamoring for it.
So you're saying no matter what, even if this came out 3 years ago, it wouldn't have done that much.
The numbers would have been better.
It would have been better, but not.
But I feel like, you know, comparatively, it would have been similar to other things released at the time. I feel like the difference between sales and say something like this and Etrian Odyssey X would probably have still been the same.
Okay. So at this point, I guess we have a Nintendo Direct coming up, and I guess that'll be it if we see the last. Remaining, I think, what's the big 3DS game remaining? There's one big one left.
Nintendo, I believe, still has to put out the remake of Luigi's Mansion.
Okay.
And I know that Atlus, I think, has a few more 3DS games coming out this year.
Well, this should be it, though. This year, like, this should pretty much be it.
Everyone keeps saying that. We'll see.
I
don't know that we're going to roar into 2020 with a strong 3DS.
This article, I just found this article from Twinfinite.net. I love that name.
Mm-hmm.
This is from last year, though. It says, Nintendo developing more 3DS games for 2019 and beyond. That's an article from a year ago. So I don't know if that's something they said that just to make sure. They said that for the Wii U. So yeah, we're not abandoning the Wii U. They were abandoning the Wii U.
They said it about the SP and the DS.
Oh, yeah. We're going
to say it every time.
Because you have to.
These are concurrent systems. I mean, they're not.
No, they're not. Okay. The Wii U, they kicked. Once the Switch came out, the Wii U, they didn't mention the Wii U at that point.
I don't think they were mentioning it before it.
The only thing, they did that like introspective, remember, about all the big things each system brought?
Yeah.
What did they do when they came to the Wii U? I don't remember what they did.
Disappointment.
It had a second screen. It was a prototype for the Switch. We fucked up. I mean, it was the error they needed to make the Switch. That's pretty much it. Okay, anything else to add here? So you're arguing that this game would have been sold well regardless, but
it would have sold more, sure, but I don't think its numbers would have been amazing.
Sure. But 20,000 is still bad.
Oh, yeah. No, that's rough.
That's like an indie game that gets on Steam popularity for like a day. You get 20,000 on that.
Yeah.
All right. Ian, you know I love Guitar Hero.
Yeah, that's your favorite.
I love Rock Band. I love hearing it in my hotel room at 3 in the morning. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So the genre of, I guess, play-along music games, is that the genre called
play along?
Because it's not karaoke.
What's your favorite genre? Play along.
The play along.
Well, there is karaoke aspects to it.
Not all of them, though. Guitar Hero, if it says guitar, some have. Rock Band has more singing. Anyway, so Guitar Hero Live came out
2015.
So I guess that was the last hurrah for the genre of the play along.
And that was its comeback tour.
Oh, that was a comeback tour.
Yeah,
after that Beatles pack in, they tried to come back more after that.
That was its comeback tour, and it didn't work. My friend got it for his girlfriend, and just telling me about how the service worked.
They had a streaming service.
It was a streaming service.
See, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah, so basically there was like, I think, 40 songs on disc, and then how it worked was, it was like a jukebox, and you could play like certain songs for free if they were on the jukebox.
Oh, this sounds horrible. Okay.
Or you could like buy, like, I believe, like currency or credits to play whatever songs.
So DLC for other songs. So according to this article,
instead of like doing the DLC packs like they did previously,
it was individual.
It's literally streaming,
How many games, when you originally bought Rock Band, like on a disc, it would have how many songs? Like 30, 40
songs? The original
songs?
Rock Band, probably like, yeah, 20 to 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they went for, we're going to release these packs of songs, maybe based on an artist. Like
expansions, yes. Sure. So, but with this, it had songs on there, but as far as I can recall, the DLC was structured in a way where it was like putting money into a jukebox. I don't think you could ever actually own...
Oh my God!
Any of the songs.
Oh my God!
That's what I'm getting at. So, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like there would be songs at any given time that were free to play on the jukebox, and they would rotate, or it was something like you could, you know, I think you could pay to play like a certain song.
So say each song was like, I would, I'll say like a quarter, I would hope,
like a
jukebox back in the 50s or the little ones at the diners. You can't keep them?
I don't believe so. There might have been a way to.
Oh, my God.
No, I don't think there is, because that's the
whole point of streaming it.
Well, and that's the crux of this article and why Activision is doing these Guitar Hero Live refunds. So basically, if you bought Guitar Hero Live between January 1st, 2019, so this past month.
Going back to December 1st.
December 1st, 2017.
So basically a two-year period about.
You can get a refund because...
Why, Ian?
Because they took down the streaming service, or they killed the streaming service at the end of 2018, or maybe even in the middle of 2018.
So the song library was 484 songs. That's gone. Now you're left to the 42 original tracks on the discs you bought.
There it is. Yeah. So the streaming aspect of it makes it uniquely weird, because no one ever owned that stuff. So once that's gone...
It's gone.
It's gone. There's no like DLC packs or anything to get. It's just you have what's on the disc. You had what's on the disc and the streaming service. And now that the streaming service is gone, that's it.
So the surmising? People are surmising that this is happening because of a lawsuit that was originally filed.
Yes.
So refund page service, according to this Engadget article based on Polygon... Refund page surfaced a couple weeks after a plaintiff voluntarily dismissed a lawsuit accusing Activision of false advertising. Robert Fischel bought GHL Guitar Hero Live 2 years after its 2015 debut, only to find out that Activision was wiping out his ability to use the vast majority of the game's songs. So it's not official, but the refund page is intended to avoid future lawsuits from Fischel, who's allowed to sue again, and other customers. So they must have come to an agreement, like, yeah, we're gonna give you your money back because it was false advertising.
Right.
So if you're advertising in the store or on, you know, oh, buy this, we have a huge library. You go online, and, oh my God, there's no songs. We're having all these songs.
Yeah, that was kind of that's the big mistake. Had they not advertised those songs, I mean, 42 songs. I mean, I've never really played Guitar Hero games, but I know that like. 42 songs. If this was like a release during the PS2 or PS3 or 360 era when
they
were doing
these, good enough, right?
That would have been fine for a base game. It's just not what they were offering.
Sure.
They sold Guitar Hero Live on this streaming
service. This was the prominent advertising.
Right, exactly.
And even you can even say like, oh, you know, it's subject to change, but subject to change is a lot different than these are wiped out.
It's gone.
It's just, they're all gone. It's not like we changed out some songs, so we lost license. You can't access them.
Yeah, you have 1/10 of the music library now.
I want to find out how much, if this is true, that you had to pay like a jukebox per, that sounds crazy.
It was being relayed to me by the person who had received it for Christmas the year it came out, and they were describing it to me. But yeah, it was along those lines.
The catch was the songs would only be available for as long as Activision supported it, and the bell tolled for that in December. Then that's when the lawsuit happened. The lawsuit happened this December. The motion was filed January 22nd for dismissals. This is all happening recently. I'm surprised it wasn't a class action. Then again, who the hell is still playing this? I guess at this point, which is probably why they said we're going to do away with it. They probably figured no one's using the service.
Yeah.
Or a lot less people.
I'm assuming almost no one is. It's funny because when people call up and ask for Guitar Hero and Rock Band stuff, it's always the PS3 and 360 or PS2 or even the Wii stuff. I get a call maybe once. I was getting a call maybe once every 3-4 months. Someone being like, hey, do you have that that Guitar Hero that just came out on the PS4? And I'm like, oh, that's been out for a while. They're like, oh, I just heard about it. You know, I mean, like, that was another thing with this game. I don't think anyone really even knew that it was out.
There's still a market, but I mean, honestly, at this point, there's been so many songs released over the iterations going back, like, what, 10, 12 years at this point or more. You can probably get your fix in multiple ways. With the, how many times are you going to rebuy the same plastic guitar?
Right.
You know what I mean? I hope they were compatible between generations. You still got them all in the big Tupperware bin.
Oh, they go
free?
Fast. And we still give them away for free, but they go very quickly.
They're playing, which version do you think they're playing? 360 version? PS3?
It's PS3, 360, or Wii.
You think so?
Yeah, those are the three that people look for. And honestly, people who really want to play it will kind of just take whatever is there. I've had people buy systems based on the fact that we had free controllers there twice. I had people looking for Guitar Hero stuff. And we had it for the Wii. We had two guitars for the Wii, and that wasn't the system they were trying to find it on, but they just bought the Wii for like $50 to go with it because, hey, it was cheaper and easier than hunting down, you know, the stuff that they needed.
Another fun time for Activision going on.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Let's see. It as well as Rock Band 4 momentarily resuscitated a music gaming genre that had gone into hibernation following 2010 Guitar Hero Warriors of Rock. Hibernation is a light term for it. Yeah. It had this period of time where it was desolate. It was a barren wasteland.
Felt bad. I had a guy call last week and ask, you know, if we took games. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, and I gave him the usual spiel. You know, we don't pay cash for PS2 or original Xbox right now, et cetera, et cetera. I said everything else, you know, for the most part, everything else is stuff that we can take a look at. You know, so if you have any questions, let me know. And he's like, no, I'll be in, you know, later. And he came in and it was like boxed, complete DJ Hero 1 and DJ Hero 2.
Oh, yeah, DJ Hero.
Like
I got
and
my copy at the swap meet.
And I was just like, people usually ask about whether, I think people know that no one really wants this stuff. So usually they will ask me specifically about it when they call. This guy went through like the spiel and gave him all the rundown, but he never asked about it. And unfortunately, that was all the stuff he had brought to sell were these complete like Rock Band, DJ Hero, Guitar Hero sets.
Sure.
And he's like, nothing, not anything. I'm like, man, I give them away for free. So he took them, which is fine. He wasn't mad. They were in nice shape. He can probably get money out of them somewhere, but yeah. They take up a lot of space.
Oh, man. Well, all right. This is my favorite part of the article. He argued that he bought the game 2 years after its launch for the discounted price of $22.43, reasonably expecting that Activision would not subsequently eliminate his ability to use the vast majority of songs. Well, you bought it at a really cheap discount for a reason, Mr. Official. Because no one wanted it. But if this could happen in the future with games that are discounted, you know, they're a few years later and they're tied to some online service that is not supported anymore.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of technology now.
Yeah, I think it's all just I think the bigger problem here was in the way that Activision sold it and advertised it.
I hear you. Ian, did you know that postage rates have gone up again?
I did. It's wild.
Thankfully, Stamps.com can ease the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. With Stamps.com, you save 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail.
Whoa.
That adds up. That's not chump change, Ian.
Sure does.
And Stamps.com is completely online, which saves you time. I've been using Stamps.com, Ian, for years and years. I've been talking about mailing out DVDs and wristbands, and I mailed out Sega CD consoles via priority mail. I've done it all with Stamps.com. They automatically calculate and print the exact amount of postage you need for every letter or package. You never have to overpay or underpay ever again. You get all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right at your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. They'll even send you a free digital scale.
Woo!
When you sign up. All right. And it saves you money, like we said. And it saves you time. Mm-hmm. You can even schedule your local post carrier to pick up your mail. All right. So right now, you get a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale, right? You go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top, and you type in CU Podcast, and you get that cool deal. Digital scale is nice. I got mine for stamps.com years ago. Digital scale is key. See for yourself why over 700,000 small businesses use stamps.com. I guess I'm a small business.
Mm-hmm.
Ian, Luna Video Games, 2 locations, a small business.
Small business.
They can use stamps.com. Again, go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in CU Podcast, and get your 4-week trial. with the free postage and your digital scale. Proud to be partnering with FlexPro Meals. They're a meal delivery service. They bring healthy pre-made meals right to your doorstep, Ian.
Yep, and we're not talking about small portions or
you want to get buff? Like that. You get some protein in you? We're talking 50, 60 grams of protein. Steak meals.
We're talking lots of meat.
Huevos rancheros.
Whoa, okay. Got some beer brat chili.
You keep bringing that up. I got to try that
one. It's a good one. I'm stuck on that one.
Just bring it over. I keep missing on the list.
Yeah, bring it over. I'll bring it over.
Bring it over in a little pot. We can heat it up on the stove. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order at flexpromeals.com when you use code CUPODCAST. And you can pick every week, every other week. You can pick the number of meals. You can do 7 meals a week. You can do 14. You can do 21. They have little protein peanut butter treats that are delicious.
I had one last night, well, actually.
I'm intermittent fasting. I'm getting hungry right now. Yeah, check it out. They're cool folks. Very accessible. Again, flexpromeals.com. Use code CUPODCAST. Save 20% off. Yeah. My voice went really weird at the end.
Pennsylvania's okay. Doing real progressive things.
Yes.
Here in Pennsylvania, this is progress. Progress is the norm.
Pat's ultra-conservatism might come out in this segment. This is from Variety, Ian. PA lawmakers, Pennsylvania, where my family now decided to move to from New Jersey for tax reasons, probably. It's cheaper to live. Introduced a bill to tax certain video games sold in the state. Guess what type of video games, Ian? Guitar Hero, Rock Band,
Music games.
The
support your artists.
The play it live genre or yeah, play it loud.
Play along genre.
The play along genre. No, Ian.
Violent video games.
Violent video games they're going to decide they want to have a tax on. Pennsylvania legislators introduce House Bill. This is in the state house, not federal. House Bill number 109 aims to impose a
sin tax.
10% tax on adult and mature-related video games sold at retail.
Yeah, in sin?
In addition to any applicable state and local taxes. Money collected will go into a newly created digital protection for a school safety account, wink.
Mm-hmm.
And be used to enhance safety measures in Pennsylvania school districts.
Well, it sounds like there's some real specifics.
Representative Christopher B. Quinn, Republican, first introduced a version of the bill in October 2018.
Christopher should be quitting.
But it died in committee. Representative Quinn said over the past few years, acts of violence in schools seem to be occurring more frequently and with more intensity. From Colorado to Connecticut to most recently in Parkland, Florida, students have experienced unthinkable actions by peers in a place that should promote learning and enrichment, safety, and protection.
Maybe introduce some fucking gun control laws, asshole.
One factor that may be contributing to the rise in intensity of school violence is the material kids see and act out in video games.
So let's get crazy on it because it may be a thing, but let's not have a conversation about guns.
He pointed to the study we actually had a good discussion about, the National Center for Health Research, that studies have shown that playing video games can increase aggressive thoughts, behaviors, and feelings in both the short and long term. However, what we said has nothing to do with sort of violent behavior being acted upon. That's always like, there's no evidence to support that.
Right.
I said violent video games can also desensitize people to seeing aggressive behavior and decrease pro-social behaviors, such as helping another person and feeling empathy. The longer the individuals are exposed to violent video games, the more likely they are to have aggressive behaviors, thoughts, and feelings. And in this article, Variety conveniently leaves out another section in the same article that makes a distinction between aggression and violence. And notes that there's no clear evidence to support the assumption that increased aggression results in more acts of lethal violence or criminal behavior, which is always what the argument comes back to. So, it's horseshit.
Yeah.
This is something to deflect from the real issue to say, well, it's a kid's video games. And this goes back, obviously.
It's the heavy metal music. It's the video games.
It's the Dungeons and Dragons. This goes back to literally the creation of the ERSRB in the 90s when they had the Senate committees and House hearings on violence in video games and Night Trap and Doom and Mortal Kombat. And Lethal Enforcers, even, where the fucking Joe Lieberman holding up a blue fucking Lethal Enforcers gun in 1994, whenever it was, 93. Joe Lieberman. You got Joe Manto. So it's always about, let's scapegoat something, whether it's in the 50s, it was comic books, because one crazy person, they found a stock of the horror comic books when he killed someone.
Yep.
Let's just scapegoat whatever we want. They created the Comics Code Authority because that's a direct correlation to the video games in the 90s was comic books in the 50s. Like, directly, the same exact thing happened.
Yep.
With that. And yes, and there are nuts that are going to be set off by something, no matter what. No matter what it is, you're going to have a nut out there that you can't control, because we have, people are not robots, and there's so many things that interact in our brain, our chemistry, and our upbringing, and just genetics that, you know, putting a tax on something, it's not going to, first of all, it's not going to curtail anyone from buying it.
No.
First off. It's like cigarettes. You tax cigarettes 150%. People still want to kill themselves by smoking cigarettes. You're not going to stop human behavior. You're going to tax or try to get rid of, put a tax on soft drinks in New York City, or get rid of the bigger containers. People still want to drink whatever they're going to drink, right? Yeah. So what does this do? This gives you rah-rah points for actually not doing anything of substance.
Yeah, it placates your idiotic base.
Or maybe your base knows that this is bullshit. I don't know. It probably is half one, right. Six, one half dozen the other.
Just where makes it look like you're doing,
you're doing something
when you're not doing anything.
You're doing something.
Hey, we're collecting money to make schools safer.
But how?
How? One door.
Put rocks in classrooms. That was the one guy said.
A bucket of rocks.
A bucket of rocks.
A bucket of fucking rocks. And then there really was the argument that there was too many doors.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay, I'm not telling you how to run your state house or run Pennsylvania.
I am.
But this ain't it.
This is not the way to go. Coming for your guns. Not your games.
You're going to put this money into a slush fund and nothing will be done. And absolutely, this amount, this percentage of school shootings will go down because of a law like this. 0%. Yes. Pat's holding out a circular zero with this. Yes.
All right. People are dumb.
I don't think violent... If you want to think about it, I don't think games are any more violent than what they've been.
No.
They haven't been. The most popular video game, you're shooting guns and stuff. I would even call it overtly violent, Fortnite. You know, like, there should be, but it's not like guts are getting ripped out.
Yeah, they disappear.
It's like the sanitized version of first-person shooters. Yeah, we're all in colored outfits and masks, and we're on a magic school bus flying around. It's like it's not even violent anymore at that point.
Yeah, you get shot with a gun, but no one really dies.
It's like you're playing a game of Nerf. You couldn't even know the differences. It's not even realistic.
They could call it that, and people would still play.
I was gonna Nerf.
Yeah, there's Nerf. They're not dying.
The whole point is that you cannot make that case anymore, that all the most popular video games are violent. Yes, you still have the Mortal Kombat things where Baraka's chewing on a brain, and I'll get called an old man for thinking that's a little over the top and stupid. But that's not what most people are playing nowadays. It just isn't.
Right.
So anyway. All right. Yeah, stupid. Stupid, 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 stupid. Stupid, stupid. Okay.
So, I got a story.
Tales from the Game Store.
Mail
put
a
nickel on that. Or Kieran can.
I can't. Like, every week's not going to be a gem. But I had a guy come in towards the end of the day at like 6 o'clock in La Mesa. And he comes in and he's got a skateboard. And he's got one of those massive, like, I am recently homeless backpacks.
What's an I'm recently homeless backpack?
One of those huge backpacks.
Oh, like the rucksacks to go camping?
Yeah, that has like everything.
You can hold like 100 pounds in it.
Right. So he comes in and he's like, hey, you guys, you know, he's off. This guy's off. Like meth, didn't do too much meth. Did like, you know, he was trying to do some social meth, I think.
So is there social meth? Meth.
I think he was going after some. I think he
moderate
just,
use.
I think he did a social amount of meth before coming into the fucking store. And so he's like a little off, but you know, he's got these questions, and he's like, so I need to sell some stuff, and I'm like, let me see what you have. So over in the corner, he opens his bag, his fucking bag that contains the world, his Santa sack. and goes through and grabs all these games. He's like, you guys buy, like, I got some good PS3 games. And I'm like, yep. So he puts them on the counter, and they're like, they're just shot to shit, which is what I was expecting.
What condition? What does that mean?
Oh, scratched, okay. You know, top scratches on the paint, scratches on the bottom. I mean, they were a mess. Even he picked up, like, after I looked at one, he picked one up and he's like, oh, these are too scratched. Like,
he even knew.
Yeah, he even knew. And it made me think,
Found them?
Yeah, I found them or stole them. So, I don't know. But anyways, I'm like, I can't take these. So, he keeps asking, like, and then afterwards, he just keeps asking, what about this memory card? What about, you know, this controller? I'm like, dude, I'm not taking any of this stuff. So, the conversation's going fine. So, anyways, he goes to leave, and he's like, he sees the free bin. He goes, oh, free? I'm like, all of it? Yes. And he, like, starts rooting around. Now, there was a Rock Band drum set in there.
Okay.
And a couple other things in there. I don't remember what else. I just know the Rock Band drum set was the big one. So he's looking at it, and I can tell that he's thinking, well, okay, this is free. Maybe I can take this and make money elsewhere.
Sure.
I don't give a shit what he does with it. If it's free, have fun. So he's like, oh, cool, so I can take this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, just take it out of the bin. So I'm helping someone else, and then I look, and I realize that the whole bin's gone. Everything's gone. Like,
okay, how much stuff was in the bin?
I mean, it was a full milk crate. Like,
okay.
Like this. I mean, it was full stuff. But, you know, it says free bin. You know, no one else has ever tried to take the bin before. So I look, and it's just everything is gone. The bin, everything, it's just gone.
What else was there?
It was, like I said, I don't remember what else was in there, but it's usually cases for portable systems.
Okay.
It's usually cases for portable
the little
systems.
Zipper ones?
Yeah. Okay. Usually, like chargers for, like, Wii remotes and stuff like
okay.
that. You know, it's usually...
Giveaway items from, like, a collector set?
Yeah, like, it's just... Yeah, exactly.
Like a little statue or something?
Yeah, like little statues and stuff like that. Those are things that we put in the free bin. So I don't know exactly what was in there. I just remember seeing the big drum set. So I'm like, oh, man, he... took the bin.
He took
the bin. I was like, you know, I mean, it's not a huge deal, but I'm like, we've used that bin for ever.
It's like take a penny, leave a penny almost.
Yeah.
He looks like someone to take all the pennies.
He's right. He looks like someone to take the actual bin.
Oh, he took the actual bin.
Yeah, he took the actual bin.
He ganked the bin.
Yeah, he picked up.
That's not part of the freebie.
No, that's what I'm getting at. The bin is not free. The stuff in the bin is free, but everything was gone. Like, I look, everything was gone. The bin was just gone. He must have picked it up and walked out the store with it. So,
free bin. He thought the bin was free.
So,
you gotta be, it's another loophole.
So, I'm helping the guy, and I'm like, oh man. I was like, well, that's not what I meant, but all right, whatever. So, you know, the customer laughs. I ring him up, whatever, he leaves. So, it's about 7:45. And I hear, you know, the step on the metal, basically. Like, you can always hear when someone's coming over
sure.
there. So, I look up, and it's the dude.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, just returning your bin. Thanks a lot, man. And puts the bin down on the ground. And is like, have a good night. And turns around and walks out. And it was just the strangest thing. Because, like, I just...
He knew it was wrong to take the actual plastic bin.
So
he knew that was over the line.
It was just, like, I mean,
what did you say to him?
I was like, thanks.
You didn't say what the fuck? Why
no,
did you take
I, just,
it?
I was just like, thanks.
Because, yeah, well, technically, you can't say why did you take all the free stuff when you don't have a limit on the free stuff.
No, you can take all the free stuff. That's fine. Take all the free stuff. We don't want it. That's why it's free. But don't take my goddamn bin. So he took it all.
Well, what do you think he did with this free stuff?
I don't know. I have no idea.
So at the swap meet, if he's trying to get money, trade it for more moderate meth usage.
Yeah, I don't know. He wants to up his meth game from social to, I don't know.
To heavy. Intermediate use.
But yeah, so within the span of like 2 hours, he came, grabbed everything, left with the bin, and then came back and gave me the bin back. And it's just odd because, I don't know, I don't think those games were his. And then he was like,
found them. They're all
sure,
messed up.
Yeah.
Or,
but yeah, I mean, it was nice of him, I guess is the thing. It was nice. It was thoughtful.
It was thoughtful that he came back.
And gave me the bin back.
The bin back.
Because if when it left, I was like, well, that's that. there was just a misunderstanding here, apparently, and I'm never going to see that bin
free
again.
Bin.
Free bin.
Now, to me, it would have been funnier if he dumped all the contents out and just took the bin.
Bin.
Because that's something you see like out of like a Three Stooges thing. Oh, yeah. Free bin. All right, what's all this shit? I just want the bin. The bin's more valuable than the Rock Band drum set on there. How old was this guy? 20s, 30s?
Mid-20s.
Hard with meth. Meth age is like
25.
40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, 25. You can tell it was just starting to age him. He's looking just a little bit like a balloon that's losing some air. Getting just those...
a little
those,
withered?
Getting those light surface wrinkles. The withering, yeah.
Was he dressed okay? Or... Was it definitely social, or is this becoming a lifestyle?
He was dressed okay, and he
always got to look at someone's shoes. That's how you tell.
And he didn't. I could tell that there would probably be an odor problem within a day or two, but at that point he was holding it down.
Okay. All right.
So,
hey, by the way, you're not clean shaven this week.
No.
When I say by the way, they're not associating your look with meth. But you were clean shaven last week, and now you're not. You tried it for a week.
Yeah, I mean, every time I do it, I don't like it, so.
You look very, very baby-faced. Oh, yeah. I miss it. Remember the first podcast when you had the Prince Valiant look? It was great.
Yeah, that was when I was growing the hair out.
That was fantastic. I missed those days. I had the same bushy hair going on. Okay, well, Ian, thanks for Tales from the Game Store.
From the Game Store.
Store. Echo. All right, Ian, we have a Patreon.
You go to... Don't we? You go to patreon.com/CU podcast, and we do stuff there.
Ian's got a writing coming up, hopefully, today. Right,
today.
This could have been the story.
You could have
reminisced on this.
Got to spread it out.
Spread it out like the PB&J sandwich at the Warriors. All right, in third place, the Patreon poll we do weekly. In third place, gaming rivalries with friends, family, 17%. Kind of disappointed by that. Sticking around. Like a cold sore at 26%. What would the CU podcast look like without Pat? 26%. And at 57%, games that cause you to rage.
Take it away, Pat.
Really? Me first? Okay, what games really caused me to rage? I think the games that caused me to rage were those games that were just difficult enough that you could get through 80% of the game, 90% of the game, but then you hit that wall of difficulty.
Sure.
That it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So I'm good enough to get through this game to this point, but now, what do I gotta be? I gotta be the 80s pro gamer with my jacket and the National Video Game Team to get through? So like Ninja Gaiden is always the best example I bring up. Because I used to rent that
game. That's a good one.
Or used to borrow it from Kevin. Kevin owned it, or I used to rent it from my local delicatessen. You would get to that last level.
Sure.
So, okay, it's kind of smooth sailing. You lose a few lives here and there from getting knocked out. But then you get what is that level? What is that level 4-3? Whatever it is, when the guys start flying around and hitting you with the stars out of the air. And I mean, you got to play perfectly at some of those parts, and they keep respawning. That's the only issue with Ninja Gaiden that makes it totally, totally unfair. At some points, is that
the respawn?
The respawn if you don't move. If you hit that point where the guys just keep coming.
Yeah.
You keep hitting them. You keep swiping them. So that to me, is not even the last guy is even easier than some of those parts there. So that caused me to rage when I was younger. I don't even remember the first time I beat Ninja Gaiden or how I did it, but that must have been like one of those like 4 hours like marathons where I finally did it, and that contributed to my awful eyesight. That caused me to rage. Top Secret episode Mazes caused me to really fucking rage.
Yeah.
Especially when I first got when I was like, 9 years old, 8 years old. I'm playing these games. And it wasn't even like the third, it was the third level. The second level, Greece, you had the couple of drop downs. And once you got to Rio de Janeiro, the third labyrinth there, holy shit. Or second labyrinth. Yeah, second labyrinth. Holy shit. That is still one of the hardest things. I remember we played on the marathon.
Yeah, I was going to say, we did it on the marathon. You played through the game.
And it was just one of those things where it was like, what the fuck? Like, you needed someone to map it out for you.
Yeah. Because
there's multiple levels, like 4 levels with different trap doors. Now, when you're an adult, you can sort of better in your head visualize what you already went through, the paths. But when you're like 8 or 9, it's harder to wrap your head around something like that. And that's like an adult game. So it's impossible. It's impossible to get through. So that really caused me... to rage. My father used to rage when I used to play him in Double Dribble. Because I used to beat him by, like, you know, 40 points. And he would throw my controller upstairs, and we hooked it up. We hooked it up to that little Magnavox monitor right there we used to play on. That survives to this day, even though my dad threw out the front part to it literally a week before I asked him, hey, do you have a little cream-colored front door to the monitor?
Said, yeah, I think.
I saw it. I threw it out. I didn't know what it was. Dad, why do you think we kept it for all these years? It was probably something I couldn't replace. Anyway, sorry.
You've told that
the same way he threw out my Cabbage Patch Kid clothes when I was 6 years old and cried about it for a week. Sorry, what?
What was the name of your Cabbage Patch Kid?
Marky Stevens.
That's right. Little Marky Stevens.
Still have him at home.
Good.
Got a sock still.
All right.
He's got, there's not his shoes. He doesn't have shoes anymore.
just socks?
He has an outfit.
Okay.
But he doesn't have his original outfit. He has an outfit that my great aunt made for him, like a cute little overalls, salmon-colored overalls with a little tie.
Wow.
But all,
I like
that. But he has his original socks, but no, he doesn't have his shoes. My father threw him out.
Fucking Marky Stevens, no shoes. How's he supposed to get a job without shoes?
See what you've done to me, Dad?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, so moving on from little Marky Stevens, games that would make me rage. Tend not to play games that make me very angry. However, I love strategy games, and strategy games always make me rage. Turn-based strategy games.
Really?
I love them. Well, because it's relaxing until I get to the end point where I lose. And then you realize, like, strategy games take a long time, like tactics RPGs. So if I lose at the end of, like, a level, it's an hour and 15 minutes gone.
You can't save it in between.
Right, right. It's, okay. Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of them, like, Advance Wars games or, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, one of those, okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, those strategy games, I love them, and I play
military strategy, military madness, yeah, sort of thing.
And I've been playing Wargroove lately on the Switch, which is fantastic. You know, it's like a, it's a spiritual successor to Advance Wars. But
sure.
It's fun. And then I lose, and it's like it's going to take me an hour and a half to get back to, you know, this point so I can
try again.
But
that's how war is, and you can't have save states every other
move. I'm just saying. It's not
fun.
It's not a problem with the game. It's just, or the genre, it's fine. It's just that's what ruins
me. That's your worst one, really?
Actually, though, it's not so much games. It's a mechanic. It will make me, it really makes me angry. Any game, a lot of mobile games do this, a lot of download games do this, any game that ranks your success on a level with 3 stars, where it's like, where you progress.
So if you get it quicker, the quickest it was like 3 stars.
Right,
or
quickest
two,
and perfect
or
is 3 stars, you know, completed.
You don't like that?
Is two, yeah.
You don't being judged while you play?
There's not a lot of room there, and it's like, it's not really judging you on anything, it's just these set conditions, and I hate collecting fucking stars to unlock more shit. It ruins games for
you
me.
You like chasing things and...
Right, cool. I just want to fucking play. If I beat the level, let me go on to the next level. If I beat all the levels, but then you tell me I need 15 more stars to continue, that's not fun to me. That's anger-inducing. I don't want to go back.
You'd rather it stop you before you get to the end.
Just figure out a better way to fucking structure shit.
Or tell you how many stars you need before you get to the end.
Right, exactly. It's, for instance, one game that I've been playing lately is Horizon Chase. It's a, like, old-school-style arcade racing game. And each level, you can get up to, like, a certain number of stars. It's not 3, luckily. But I beat all the levels. I've come in first place on all of them, but I didn't do enough perfect runs, so I can't continue on. Fuck it.
No, you know what? I'm going to rage again.
All right.
I'm going to rage again. Not knowing the game's unbeatable. In older...
Oh, arcade games?
Older point-and-clicking. Click-and-point adventures.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Return to Zork.
So many of them did it. Sierra was the worst about it.
Oh, the King's Quest ones were bad. Space Quest didn't really do that as much.
But not as bad.
King's Quest was bad, from what I remember. I only played a couple of
King's
Quest.
King's Quest 5 has the one that I always remember where...
The mouse one.
Oh, I was going to say the pie.
Oh, the pie, too.
There's a pie that you can get, and you can immediately throw it in someone's face if you want to, but it ruins the game for you like 2 hours later.
Yeah, so in the point-and-click games, they're made for adults, but... They weren't like other later point-click games where it wouldn't allow you to do certain stuff. Or if it did, it would reverse it for you.
LucasArts pretty early on, not immediately.
LucasArts got rid of it.
Pretty early on made unwinnable scenarios, got rid of them.
They eliminated.
Yeah.
They just said you got to do specific things in order to move on point A to point B. Yeah. And then that like Fatal Innocent, like Sam and Max.
Yeah. I'd rather be stuck in a spot forever than...
versus do something wrong, have too much freedom, and you're fucked.
Right.
Return of the Zork was the worst that I remember playing. About that, I think sometimes they would give you a message that the path to victory is now blocked, but half the time you didn't know why,
right?
Because you would have stuff in your inventory, and then like you had to do something a certain amount of time in the inventory. If you didn't, you were fucked.
Zork, it's the plant, right? Return to Zork,
not just the plant. There's other things.
No, I know, but that was the big one. That's the one that I always.
And
remember.
The very first part of Return to Zork, you have the choice of pulling the plant out or digging it out.
Yeah,
and if you don't dig it out, you're fucked.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Because it damages like the nerve structure. Or something.
Then there's like meat you get later on from like the slaughterhouse or something. And you can go if it goes rotten within a certain amount of turns, you lose.
Yep.
There's shit like that I fucking hate. Just can't stand it.
Yeah, adventure.
And
games,
that's not it though. There's more. I'm probably forgetting.
Adventure games with time limits.
Oh no.
Turn limits. I couldn't stand that.
But that goes back to like the original just text ones where you had a certain amount of time to get out of like a weird like a location.
Yeah.
Find a way out. Or the ogre eats you at night or whatever. I get that. But when it's visual, when you have a lot more options with an inventory, it's just, I just didn't like that.
Yeah. The ICOM games had time limits that were reasonable, I guess.
They're reasonable.
ICOM would be like the Shadowgate, Uninvited, and Deja Vu.
Like the torches and things like
that?
Yeah. Okay.
Right. They were kind of... Especially with, like, the torches, it was put in more organically, I suppose. But, yeah, like, once actual point-and-click ones where you could kind of go... Yeah, that was awful with the time limits. I couldn't stand that.
Man, you don't want to toss out a game genre like that. The same way my dad tossed out my Marky Stevens clothes. You know what the worst part about that was, Ian?
I don't know, Pat.
The worst part about that, Ian, was I actually built a cute little bed for him to sleep in. I cut out a cardboard box.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I put a little pillow in there for him.
I know
him,
a lot about Marcus Stevens.
And he was in the back rec room.
Mm-hmm.
And my father claims to this day that I gave him permission to throw out all of his, not just his bed, where he lived, basically, his room, Marcus Stevens' room. He said I gave him permission somehow at 6 years old implicitly to throw out the clothes. At 6 years old. That would not stand up in a court of fucking law that a six-year-old can make a decision to throw out basically my adopted son. Because I have the adoption paper still. My adopted son's clothes.
Why would you throw out the clothes?
I don't know, Ian. Ask my dad about that next time he comes out.
Why would you throw out the clothes but not the doll?
I would have murdered him as a six-year-old if I threw out the doll, first of all.
Sure.
But why would you throw out the shoes? Socks are not enough in New Jersey's cold winters to keep Marcus Stevens' feet warm. Why would you throw out those nice plastic shoes? I'm going on eBay and I'm buying the shoes. I'm buying the shoes for him. I'm gonna find him. He's back home. He's back home in my parents' place.
Panhandling.
I gotta rescue him. Gotta rescue Marky Stevens. I'm gonna get Marky Stevens. Next time I go back home, he's gonna be in the podcast. He's gonna sit right behind me. I'm sorry, Marky Stevens, for abandoning you in your time of need. Sorry.
So we've got this Q&A. Reader Q&A.
Yeah. Sorry.
Q&A.
Sorry. I was sorry about that.
This one's from Pat. Pat reads.
This is from at Brian Lapitan, two L's. I would like a discussion about replaying games. You would, Brian. Do you do it much? How often in your most replayed games? Games are much bigger now, and many of them may not lend themselves to future replayability. Your thoughts?
So I replay a lot of games, and lately I've...
Playing some Nintendo games, I know.
Yeah, Black Bass is the one I'm playing right now. Black Bass and Blue Marlin.
Sure.
But anyways, so I do replay games. I think about replaying games more than I actually do replay them. But this question is well-timed because I've recently started playing Killer 7 again on the GameCube and Valkyrie Profile on the PlayStation. Both games that I've played before and replayed before and will probably keep replaying. It's always interesting to me every time I do, just to see, because I'm always interested in how they're going to hold up. I don't replay them enough to, it's not like I replay them every year. I replay them every few years. So I'm always interested to see if I'm still going to enjoy them as much as I did. Valkyrie Profile holds up incredibly well. And Killer 7 does too, because the gameplay in Killer 7 was always kind of an afterthought to the weird story. As far as games that I've replayed the most. DuckTales and probably Jet Set Radio on the Dreamcast. I think I...
How long does it take to play through?
Jet Set?
Yeah.
A few hours. Say anywhere from 3 to 5 hours.
Okay.
And I've probably played through that about 15 times. I've played
15?
I played that game a lot.
Once a year? Once every year and a half?
I imported it for the Dreamcast, beat it twice, bought the US version, beat that a bunch of times, went back to the Japanese version because I liked it better than the US version. I didn't like the additional levels. They were super buggy in the US version. And then I've bought it on multiple platforms since and replayed it, you know, probably upwards of 10 to 15 times.
Very nice.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm not trying to pump up the Kickstarter, but I replay ActRaiser every probably couple of years. Mm-hmm. That's one of my all-time favorite games. And I just recently replayed it a few days ago. And I always pick up something different when I replay it. Something I missed before. And it's the same process. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty linear. It's not, I'm not going to find anything different. You can develop the towns in different orders slightly if you want and go back and forth, but you're gonna reach the same spot no matter what. It's just a beautiful game. It's like a journey.
Yeah,
playing that game. I mean, does Civilization count? Whenever I go back to Civilization,
I mean,
does that even count? Because that's like a different game every time, really.
Right?
Do you even count games like that?
It's kind of endless.
I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I lost the whole summer to playing Civilization. So yeah, I used to replay Civilization a lot. In terms of like action games or platformers, I don't revisit a huge amount. I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, I think about games we replay all the time for the charity marathon. Games like Contra, you come back to because that's quick. You beat Contra like in 20 minutes if you're good. You know, games like that. That's Contra's like my DuckTales. Ian's DuckTales is my Contra, so to speak. Games that Ninja Gaiden, every once in a while you get back into that, it's easy. Like the games you want to get back into are ones that you can get into a rhythm, I think, and play. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
Like you and DuckTales playing Ninja Gaiden, you can just roll through most of the game. Or like I said, Contra, you can just get through most of it. I'll replay Legend of Zelda, like, I want to say, like, once every 4 to 5 years. I'll do a Legend of Zelda. Because that, you can get through the whole game in, like, what, 2.5 hours if you're pretty good. Get through it.
I don't know. I beat it, but I honestly I've never done it enough to tell you.
Two and a half to three hours if you go at a decent pace, but not like you're not speed running it.
Sure,
and know where to go. Probably a little bit less than that, you know. And I'm pretty skilled at Legend of Zelda. I kind of know what I'm doing. So those are ones I tend to replay. That aren't like, you know, I'm not talking like arcade games, go back into the arcades. You know, that's different. Because arcade games, you sort of play what's in front of you and what's there, if that makes sense. It's sort of like the comfort food when you're in an arcade. Those are the games I go back and replay a lot. Got to replay a lot of Unreal Tournament because it's not a new one. I have to mention that again.
Update. $4,349.
Oh, on what, Ian? Would that be on a certain Super Nintendo book Kickstarter at ultimatesnes.com?
Correct.
Thanks, Ian.
You're welcome.
All right. All right.
I ask, do you think with Disney Plus and Apple streaming services coming soon, there will be a streaming bubble that will pop due to an oversaturated market and everyone will run back to cable?
That's from at Weebs Are Cool.
Weebs Are Cool. All right, Weebs Are Cool.
So will people run back to cable? No. I don't think people will ever run back to cable. No matter how this plays out, if we're subscribed to 20 different services at $10 a piece, it will still be better than cable. I think it still will be. This is why. Because it's easier to get out of these streaming services than cable customer service. Less shit goes down where they got to come out. I had a guy look at my cable was fine the first year I was here. Randomly, it stopped connecting to the box. The guy had to come out just for that. It took 3.5 days to come out. So I basically had intermittent TV for 3.5 days.
When was this? Was this after the rain?
It was before the heavy rain. It was after like a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think it had anything to do with the rain. He said, oh, no, the line coming to the house just was not good. And he said the last person that installed it did something wrong. I was like, oh, okay.
That's, I hear that a lot.
I was like, okay.
Whenever I've had problems, I think I had...
And I believed him because he was straightforward. He was only here for like a half hour and he got it done. But
that happened a lot when I had AT&T.
But I don't like cable companies because they screw you and they have monopolies. I don't know if they have monopolies in New Jersey, though, but they did. They're underhanded. They're sneaky. They overcharge. And they're not needed. They're middlemen. And that's what streaming has showed us. They are middlemen. They don't create any fucking content. They just put it in front of your face for a hefty fee. And you can't decide what you want to watch. The biggest one used to be when they first started talking about a la carte. This is like the late 90s. They're like, because that's when the cable really expanded. When they said, like, oh, we're going to have the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
And Court TV and all this other shit. And my dad's looking at the bill and he's like, well, I don't, we're not going to watch any of these channels. I was like, no, you're right. But you don't have a choice. They give you, oh, we'll give you the shitty option with 10 channels, the intermediate one with 50, or the one with that's HBO and Showtime. Like, those are your options.
Right. And you never had all the channels you wanted in the this.
No, they did it where it's like, well, you get almost all the channels in this one, but you got to get the full one.
But if you want, like, you know, the three channels you'll actually watch, like Food TV and, I don't know, Dick McMuffins, then you need to get the very expensive package.
I watch, if you put a gun to my head, in the average week, I probably do not watch more than 9 different TV channels in a week. ESPN, ESPN2, probably. I'll watch, we'll just make an argument. I'll watch one of two channels to watch, maybe NBA, like, or something like NBC or TNT. That's like 4. Maybe some network thing that came on. USA for Monday Night Raw, or the SVU marathon they had, or Suits. What is that, 7 or 6? I'm already starting to run out. I'm literally starting to run out of
things. I glazed over as soon as you started talking about TV channels.
Wherever Forensic Files is, I fall asleep to.
Yep.
What is that, True TV? Which used to be Court TV?
It's everywhere.
I watched like 8 channels in a week. And cable charges you for 180 that you don't watch. So, no, I think we're going to get to... I think we'll get to the point where people will start spending $100 per month on streaming services. I do see that. I do. People will start buying ESPN and watch that. And they'll have HBO and or Showtime. I do miss not having Showtime. Or excuse me, HBO I miss. I'll get it back for Curb, for sure, HBO, when it comes back. Right now, I just have Netflix. Amazon probably don't count because that's really the shipping thing and, you know, free shipping, and Hulu. That's what I have right now. What about you, Ian? What do you think?
Just the other day, I was actually talking to someone and saying, Jesus Christ, this makes me just want to get cable again.
Well, what do you have right now?
I have
Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix.
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Funimation.
Funimation?
Yeah.
So you have what is that, $40 a month?
Thereabouts.
You can't even count Amazon, though, because that's almost like a throw-on extra. I don't even want, if it wasn't for Unsolved Mysteries, I wouldn't even watch it Amazon Prime as much as I've been watching. Oh, you know what episode was on? I watched yesterday. It was on the Alcatraz episode. I watched it when I was a kid. I was fascinated by
it's
that.
A good one.
That's when they actually hired a swimmer to see if he could get across the bay. Spoilers, he couldn't get across the and that was a professional swimmer.
Yep.
And then they built the raft that the three guys built. Uh-huh. And that, no, nothing doing there either. So they never found the bodies of those three guys. But it would be hard-pressed for them to make that trip. But they never found the bodies, ever, in the bay. You would think they would have washed up somewhere. So I think, Ian,
update.
They got the word out to a boat out there. They swam out to a boat that got them. That would make sense to me.
Sure.
They got the word out, hey, we're going to do it this date. You know, a boat was there. Or they said, it isn't the dates we're going to be there, one of these days, few days. And there was a boat waiting for them, like halfway through. That would make the most sense, to me. Love that. I love that shit. I love that Alcatraz thing. Ingenious. The Clint Eastwood movies are not bad. They run through what they did for action, plus it's Clint Eastwood.
Right.
So go watch the Clint Eastwood movie, at least. Came out like in the late 60s. There. Okay. Last Q&A, Ian.
This is from Jack K. White II at GJackX. Arcade games or console games? Either apply here. When you are reminded of certain ones, which ones bring back the nostalgic feels, like take you back to where you were, who you were with, man. Give you a literal goosebumps? Patton Rolling Thunder.
What's great about arcade games is that you usually remember where you first were, where you played them. That there was just a feeling, like when you saw an arcade or a game, it's sort of tied to the environment, at least in my head.
Sure.
So that's why I get the most nostalgic for arcade games. Like, more than console's like, yeah, I remember the first time I played Akari Warriors, I was disappointed on Christmas playing it, you know, after Super Mario Bros. You know, like, you kind of remember that. But for an arcade game, like, I can tell you the first time I played APB was at the Perth Amboy Cineplex, right next to when they used to have the Razzmatazz. Remember Razzmatazz?
No.
Razzmatazz was, like, the regional sort of, like, Chuck E. Cheese. They had the animatronic band.
Yes. We had Major Magics.
Same sort of thing, you know. There's people that now... take the old Razzle and they restore them to get them back to where they were. It's awesome that someone's doing that. Anyway, so the Perth Amboy multiplex, that was at a time where most movie theaters, God, if you're young, now I sound old, most movie theaters 25 years ago were like two screens, maybe three. It wasn't until the mid to late 90s you had, first there were Sony theaters, then they became Lowe's. You know, then you had these huge destination sites that had 20 screens where you could see every single movie. It wasn't like that.
No.
Very few places like that. But the Perth Amboy one was like, oh my God, there's 15 different movies. They had them, this is not even LED screen. They would put the letters up. A guy would go on a ladder and put the letters up. And you would see every single movie and the times they were playing. So it was multi-leveled place. It was so the arcade at Perth Amboy wasn't all together. It was spread out above the whole floor, and on the wings is where you had the theaters. So I remember specifically walking over. My dad gave me five. We get there an hour early. My dad gave me $3-4 and quarters, sometimes five if he was feeling nice because he threw away my Marky Stevens clothes. And I would play APB. I remember where it was. I remember playing POW. I remember specifically those were the first songs I played was that Amboy Cinema. I remember playing Rolling Thunder at the bowling alley. I know it was right next to the Road Blasters machine. I remember these things. I remember them being there and getting my ass kicked. I probably, when I was 8 years old, I probably couldn't get past the first level of Rolling Thunder. Probably couldn't. Or got close and got killed. You know, I remember playing Spy Hunter at Spaceport at Woodbridge Center in the Dungy arcade. Went all the way back. It was an arcade,
Tony Dungy or Dingy?
But it was one of those sort of, I think Spaceport was sort of the other spacey arcade. They were chains, kind of.
Yeah.
The Spy Hunter cockpit version was at the very back. My dad let me there by myself, even though he shouldn't. There were some nefarious people around in 1985 at the arcade. But I remember sitting down and playing it. You remember these sights and sounds. I remember my dad playing Operation Wolf, seeing him, shoot the Uzi and things. So all of these remind me of something. This is part of nostalgia. You go back in time feeling where you were at a certain time period, you sort of had that feeling of when you first played it, which is, it's like a drug almost. You get that serotonin injection about, oh, I remember being happy, innocent, plucking in quarters in the machine. So that to me is more in console. It's always going to be arcade games for me. Those are the feelings I had, because they're usually tied to other experiences. You're out of the house, you're at the mall, you're at the bowling alley, usually kids party, things like that.
Yeah, I agree. For me, there are two arcade games that, the Star Wars arcade game, specifically the sit down cab, will always,
where was that for you?
It was a place called Fun. It was an arcade called Fun and Games in the Eastern Hills Mall.
Okay.
And, when I'd go out and run errands with my dad, that was one that when I was young, like a kid, like 4, 5, 6, that was the mall he would regularly go to. And I remember being one of my earliest memories with games, period. But I remember my dad taking me to that arcade, and we'd always play a couple rounds of that. I'd sit in his lap and basically put my hands on the controller, and he would play the game. So, I mean, that's one of the first games I remember playing, and I'll never not think of that arcade when I see it. And another one is actually, because of the same arcade and because of the same stuff, Duck Hunt. They had a Duck Hunt cab there. They had the versus Duck Hunt. Yep.
With the big ass gun, the heavy ass gun.
Yeah, with the huge heavy gun. Because I specifically remember my dad being like, go ahead, shoot the duck, and not being able to.
It was too heavy for Ian's little hand?
Yeah. I mean, it was a fucking heavy fucking gun.
It was a cannon, hand cannon.
So I agree. Arcade games, where you played them and where you were, the surrounding tends to get cemented in your head more so.
The sounds. And I can remember how dark it was in the room, in Spaceport at Woodbridge Center. I remember how it felt.
And I think it's funny, too, because of arcades. I don't know about you, but it's easy to get certain games. It's easy to link certain games memory wise. I can't think of Mortal Kombat 2 without thinking of teed off the pinball machine, because where I would always go with my friends so they would play Mortal Kombat 2 was directly next to a teed off pinball machine, and the fucking gopher would chatter. I always remember that. X-Men arcade, I always kind of think about with Mortal Kombat 1, because I played both of those for the first time at a birthday party, something along those lines.
My Mortal Kombat 1 was at a drugstore. God, it was like a, I think it was like a CBS. Some of the CBSs even like they'd have arcade machines in. I don't think it was a mom and pop. In the back corner, like towards like to the left was like going to like the warehouse section, like mm-hmm. like the back room. They had NBA Jam next to Mortal Kombat. And that was the first time I played. Definitely the first time I played NBA Jam was there. But that was the first time I ever saw it. So I'd go over to my cousins. We'd go over and we'd play that like every other weekend. We would just sit there for a couple hours and play a few games of NBA Jam. So that's like, yeah, it's like 93. I can tell you probably most arcade games, I can tell you exactly where I was the first time I played them. Commando was at the Weber Center Mall as well. I got my ass kicked as Commando as a kid. But to me, that sort of stood out. I'm not sure why. I guess I like G.I. Joe. So it had the cool cabinet. It was the camouflage. And that's probably the reason why it was my first PC game my dad bought. Because I got my ass kicked. I couldn't get past the first level as a kid.
That was the first time I ever played Commando. It was the Tandy version, I'm pretty sure.
The Tandy version? That's probably better than the XT. The Commodore one had really good music.
I'm trying to remember.
But the XT one didn't. Yeah, and I'm getting the feels for getting an arcade together somewhere, you know, because there's something about arcades that's probably the reason why arcades have come back strong, is that people want the communal feeling of being around the other games too. It's like a party. The games are friends hanging out together, right? No, is that kind of weird? I don't know. Right. Thanks for the Q&A, of course, as always. All right, any other thing? Anything else going on, Ian?
Nah.
Oh, Kickstarter 4349 right now. All right, so check out the Kickstarter for a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. It's going to be released early summer at ultimatesnes.com. Oh, it just went up $400. Ooh, that's cool. It does real time now. Updates. Yeah. Oh, well, okay. And then Ian and I will be at Soul Calibur Gaming Expo February 23rd and 24th.
Sure will.
Use code CU Podcast to save on tickets at the website. I think I'm doing a panel on Saturday. And then NES Marathon, we're looking at March 9th and 10th. A firm announcement will be made hopefully by the weekend or early next week, and that'll give us a full 3 weeks to prepare.
Woo.
I am starving. It's been a fun CU podcast.
Getting pretty hungry too.
I don't know how long we recorded for.
Gonna go home and eat.
Well, we gotta do a little OBS test up first. We're gonna do that too. So hang with us. If you're listening to this, you missed our live stream tryout on Twitch real quick. All right, that's Ian Ferguson.
I'm here.
I'm Pat Contry. I was there. Marky Stevens. He's hanging out without a bed. See you later.